Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is Tuesday, April the 19th, 2022, and this is Ralph Pointer, What's Happening? And today's topic is, wait for it, listen carefully, the Biden and Ukraine issue has managed to create a foundation for world unity of anti-imperialist progressives. Yes, I said it, and we are going to repeat it. The Biden and Ukraine issue has managed to create a foundation for world unity of anti-imperialist progressives. Yeah, put that in your pipe and smoke it. This is a news analysis, an anatomy of oppression, which requires an anatomy of colonialism and imperialism, which is the definition of American capitalism. And the house is packed tonight, so we're just going to jump right into it. Mr. Ralph Pointer, what's happening?
Well, my brothers and sisters, you have just heard a capsulized statement of what is happening. Now, those of us who are action people, sometimes we say, well, I wish I could have lived in the 16th century, the 18th century, the early 20th century. No, my brothers and sisters, it's always a good time to have lived. But we are living in a planet-changing period. And what we're talking about is the economies of the world. One world stole economies from another world. And the struggle has been to get the economies back. But how does one do that? It takes an organization. It takes a togetherness. It takes a philosophy to pull these people together. Well, we have a situation where clarity is brought for us through the people of the realities of imperialism. I would just love to sit and rap on that for 2 or 3 hours, but we can't do that. But one of the things that is exciting me is we have people on this program, this very program, who were working to bring this about, who had the issues that confronted this very fact face to face, mano y mano, if I were to use that expression. But we have a lot of women who fought, died, went down, bringing this situation to a head. I'm thinking of Winnie Mandela, you know, like in the African National Congress, ANC, supported a communist organization supported by Russia and United States. Now, understand this. We all say we love Nelson. We love Nelson. But American intelligence informed the South African organization as to where and how they could capture Nelson Mandela and imprison him. They fought against the liberation forces of Africa. But one of the beauties of that we heard last week, some of our brothers who were involved in this very issue of supporting revolutionary groups around Africa are on our program. We're living in exciting times with exciting people, and we on this program want to make sense of this whole situation so that there can be world unity of anti-imperialist progressive peoples. We know who stole from who. And now the question is, whose side are you on? And one last statement that I heard a representative of South Africa had made to the press. And he says, well, United States is asking us to vote against Russia. But I remember being in the field with brothers from Zimbabwe, Angola, South Africa, fighting American forces, South African forces, Israeli forces. And the only thing, in many situations, the only thing that enabled us to continue the struggle were Russian jets overhead, keeping the superior arms and forces of the evil axis of United States, Israel, and South Africa from overrunning us. And they come and ask us to vote against the very people who saved us. Now, this situation can be repeated worldwide. Here we are in America. Who went to defend when they called it civil rights? Who was defending people in the South who were charged with outrageous crimes, who were charged with things they didn't do? It was the Communist Party, the old Communist Party, the struggle of the unions against the U.S. government, because every time there was a union struggle against a corporation, and when the arms were brought out and the people defended themselves, the government of America came out against American citizens. And when we see Tulsa, when people fought back, who came out against them? The government bombed them, etc. And, of course, we weren't, we were never citizens, but we were living in America, and we had certainly earned the respect of people who work and progress and develop themselves. And so here we are at a moment in history where the United States has gone to China and criticized the Chinese government for not doing enough to suppress those capitalists in China who have fentanyl factories and ship the fentanyl to America, forgetting the opium wars, gunboats firing on Shanghai to force the Chinese government to accept opium in its society. And I could go on and on. And with South America, Venezuela, and when Biden says he'll send somebody so we can get oil from Venezuela, and I says, well, just ask Juan Guaido. Don't bother going to Venezuela. And that's tongue-in-cheek. You know, he was never in charge, but he was the puppet the Americans were going to put in charge and then take the oil. As Trump says, what are we talking about? We'll just take the oil. This is what they have in mind. And this is the people of the world can see clearly whose side they are on. And we must decide whose side we are on. But we have some very interesting and relevant facts that tell us whose side we should be on. The beatings of the Haitian immigrants trying to come into the country, migrants, and we have border guards playing cowboys. And then we think of cowboys and who? The same story over and over again. Whose side are we on? We have to be on our own side, and we have to be on the side of our brothers and sisters, our heroic brothers and sisters who stood up and fought when most of us didn't understand what the fight was about. We must defend them in this period. We must join in, become a part of this fantastic, earth-shattering history that's taking place today. We must become a part of it and reach out to bring our brothers and sisters back from death in the death camps of America. We know whose side they're on, but the question is, whose side are you on, and what are you or what are we going to do about it? Well, this evening we'll have people presenting facts, and I'm waiting with bated breath to hear the responses of the people on the issues at home and abroad, because it's not about one thing, it's about everything. And so I will get off, put the mic back in the hands of our dear Sister Betty. Sister Betty, take us forward.
Well, as always, we always start off our program in memory of a warrior first transition, Lynn Stewart. And because of her absolute love of poetry, we always try to have a poet in residence, and Professor Louie is in the house. Thank you for joining us once again, Professor Louie. Your mic is open.
Pick us up and educate us one more time.
All right. War on drugs, war on black and brown. This is exactly what's going down. Don't look in a book, take a good look around. War on drugs, war on black and brown. Now everybody knows black people get high, and everybody knows white people get high. Who gets higher is just about even. statistics you believe in, say it's even Steven, but who goes to jail is the brown and the black. If you don't think so, you've been smoking crack. Drug use and abuse is everywhere. But who goes to prison is not shared. White college kid does dope in his dormitory. Ghetto kid on the corner goes to the reformatory. Same act, same fact, but not the same end. What you saw about the law, that's just pretend. Ghetto kid goes to jail for using drugs. White kid gets counseling, rehab, and tough love. And you didn't hurt nobody but yourself. You didn't lay a finger on nobody else, but drug use can get you some time. You wonder like thunder, where is the crime? Because we know what color gets frisked and stopped, and you could trust what color gets busted by the cop, and it's your lawyer who saw you, else the public defender. In the end, he's so busy, he don't care where they send you, and it's years of charges. That time is long. In court, the cop's always right, and you're always wrong, and you know the DA wants a conviction. More conviction is his job description. It's all played out and laid out plain as could be. The guy from the ghetto better cop a plea. You do time for the crime, and when you come out, your soul gets parole. Without a doubt, you serve that out. You think you're through, but the law is not through with you. You go for a job, and every time you come to the line where you got a sign, I committed a crime. Housing, you saw, they all closed the door. We don't take criminals here no more. Sometimes no food stamps, no public assistance. Looks like the system don't want your existence. You can't float your boat, and you get that note they send in the end. You can't even vote. It's bitter medicine, but you got out the prison, and you are now a second-class citizen. War on drugs, war on brown and black. You don't got the dollars? Look out, Jack. It's money in the front, color in the back. War on drugs, war on brown and black. And at night, you might not want the sight of jail in your neighborhood, but the prison business is doing good. Private prisons make good investment, make money off the guilty, money off the innocent. Prison contractors got big-time investors. They need drug users, three-time losers, political protesters, guards white, prisoners black. Corporations get workers. They don't got to pay back. And with the jail without fail, full of black and brown, without a visit, what is it that's really going down? It's hard to ignore. Big people can't use the N-word no more, but they still want control like they had before. They got words that are minimal, even subliminal. You can't call them a nigger. You call them a criminal. And for criminals, it's true. We know what to do. They're second-class citizens through and through, and this situation across the nation is called mass incarceration. We got more people in jail than any other country. We got more prisons. We spend more money up, down, all around. It's come to pass. Millions of people are now second class, and politicians, you find, talk out of their mind. The police and the law are colorblind. Now, I see color. You see color. When we took a look, we see one another. What we do about color, that's the test. In the heart, can you start to really do your best? Because when the last nail fills the jail with black and brown, even the poor white guy might go down, and you'll be high as the sky. Someone might snitch, but you still walk free if you're white and rich. And crime's not what it seems. It's not in the genes. When you got them at the bottom, we're all human beings, and we're either going to learn or burn together, not make up fairy tales. Our kind is better. So it's not a few bad apples. It's the whole system, Jew, Muslim, or Christian. Just look and listen. Millions of people in cages. It's not very nice. In or out the prison, we all pay the price. War on drugs, war on brown and black. Stolen lives that never come back. It's not a war on thugs, not a war on crack. War on drugs is war on brown and black.
One more time. Listening to that poetry gets me excited and educated, entertained. It is so perfect. Thank you one more time, Professor Louis. Sister Betty.
We appreciate you. We appreciate you. We appreciate you. We're going to get right down to it tonight, because more and more we're seeing longer lines of people who are out there fighting and struggling, and they need to get the word out, and they need to get our support. So without further ado, we always start by honoring those who first went down fighting for us, our political prisoners. And tonight, as always, always faithful, New York City, Jericho, Ann Lamb, your mic is open.
Oh, thank you so much, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph. Always a pleasure and an honor to be with you. Great to hear the poem by Professor Louis. It's so, so true. We know this because we live it every day. We've been talking about our little friend there, Eric King. Now, Eric King, despite of all our attempts to not have him go back to USTV, according to the BOP, he is currently at USP Atlanta. Now, he has apparently been there since Friday, but they may just not have updated their little locator, which wouldn't surprise me. So, supporters are desperately trying to find out where exactly he is. Are they going to keep him at USP Atlanta, which is actually a medium? Or are they going to send him to USP Lee, which is a max, and where his life is in danger, where he was already threatened with death once before by white supremacists in collusion with white supremacist COs, which are correctional officers, in case anybody doesn't know that, and they need to be corrected. Anyway, there is going to be a webinar on Thursday, 3 p.m. Pacific time, 6 p.m. our time. It's called an Eric King trial recap, but I am sure they will also have something to say about the current situation, his legal team, and you can register at cldc.org/event/EK trial. And that is also up on jerichony.org. You can look for it. You can just click on the link there if you have time on Thursday. Unfortunately, I do not have time on Thursday at 6, but hopefully they will record it, and I will get to listen to it later. So that's something that's pending. It would seem that BOP is determined to put him back at USP Lee, despite all many people's efforts to the contrary. But at the moment, he is at USP Atlanta, according to their website. So we don't really know yet. Now, on a positive note, a semi-positive note, Dr. Mutulu Shakur had a parole hearing, not yesterday, last week on Monday, which I did not know immediate month. And one of his family members put out a little post on Facebook, to please pray for him because he's going, to be in front of the parole commission. Haven't heard anything yet about any decision by the parole commission. This was a mandatory hearing that when he won that habeas corpus for the last time when they denied him parole, and they said it was because a teacher had him on the phone and he talked to her class, and that was some kind of violation of this and that, and so on and so forth. Turns out that is not so. It was not a violation of anything. They were ordered also to give him back 27 days of good time and to have this mandatory hearing. So that did happen. As to the results of that, we're waiting to hear. So while we're waiting to hear, keep Mutulu in your thoughts and in your prayers if you pray, and let's hope for a positive outcome, which would be fairly amazing as far as I'm concerned. So we also have, of course, upcoming events. You probably have somebody already to talk about, Mumia, right, Sister Betty?
Not yet, Ann. So if they get on, they can just repeat it. Go for it.
Okay. Yeah, on April 24th is Mumia's birthday, as I'm sure many people are aware. He will be 68 years young. So there are events in various places around the country and around the world. But we are doing one here in New York City, for those in New York City, called The Fierce Urgency of Now, which it certainly is, from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday. Celebrate Mumia Abu-Jamal's 68th birthday after 40 years of unjust incarceration. We will speak truth to power, as Mumia always does, connecting all issues from climate to militarism. We'll also feature the work of Japanese anti-nuke power artists. That should be really nice. Special brunch and drink menu, cash only. This is at the 5C Cafe and Cultural Center, which is at 68 Avenue C, the corner of 5th Street and Avenue C. So that'll be going on from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. So that's a fairly long event. If you can't make all of it, please come for some of it. There'll also be a film screening in Houston, Texas. They'll be showing Long Distance Revolutionary at 3 p.m. at the Shape Community Center. The West Coast is also having a campus teaching and call to action, which will be streaming on Zoom and YouTube. And the Germans are having also a wonderful event for Mumia. I believe they're doing that on Saturday the 23rd. People in Mexico are having an event for Mumia on the 24th. I will be sending this out shortly. So there's a lot of stuff happening for Mumia. We're happy to report on the 24th. I did hear that he was finally getting that ultraviolet treatment that he needs for his skin. So that is a positive thing. But, of course, we need him home here with us. Man has been in prison for more than 40 years for a crime that he did not commit. He is innocent. He should not be in prison at all. And that is what we've been fighting for all these long years. Let's get Mumia and everybody else home. So there's also an event, a couple of events on the 23rd. There's a film about Cuba in Africa. It should be very interesting. And that's an award-winning film, which is going to be shown at the People's Church on Saturday from 3 to 5:30. That's 1791 Lexington Avenue at 111th Street. It's called Cuba in Africa, When Africa Called, Cuba Answered. Film screening and discussion. That is an in-person event. Should be very interesting. And simultaneously, we also have going on a event about the Puerto Rico and the diaspora, which should also be very interesting to see. And that will be happening at the People's Forum. That's another film that's happening, film with a panel discussion. And that is at the People's Forum on Saturday, the 23rd, at 2 p.m. So at 320 West 37th Street, wear a mask and bring proof of vaccination. And I would say if you're going to the People's Church, you might want to do the same just in case. So this is all very interesting. We have a couple of things going on sort of simultaneously, unfortunately. Then we have many events for Mumia on Sunday. We have the webinar for Eric on Thursday. We will be having an event the following Saturday, April 30th, from 3 to 5 p.m., also at the People's Forum. And we will have Professor Louis, who you just heard, Sister Nzinga, who often does wonderful poetry on this program as well. So we will be looking forward to seeing people there. I want to take up too much of everybody's time because I know you're busy and you have a lot of people to speak about, a lot of important things. But this is my passion, you know. Political prisoners are my passion, and I want to see them all come home. And in order to do that, we have to pick up the work, as our sister Safia Bukhari always said. The only way people are going to get home is if we the people, as Ben Ramos always says, we the people free political prisoners. And we do. Certainly the Puerto Rican community is a wonderful example of freeing their political prisoners. So if we could be as united here as the Puerto Ricans were around their political prisoners, we probably could bring them all home very soon. So that's my for the evening. What's the call? Free them all.
Free them all. Thank you so much for that, Ann. And I encourage everybody to go to the Jericho website. But now in the moment in history where the Democrats are organizing us to help them survive the Republicans, they need our help. We must bring up the demand because we're going to save them. But we have to have the demand of saving our political prisoners first. We have to spread that around to our families, our religious groups, our non-religious groups, our political groups, our friends who are Democrats. They've got to get to their people that they give their vote to and just say the word. We can demonstrate. We're not going to vote for you until you're out there in front, like Cynthia McKinney, like Charles Barron, like those few representatives who speak of our political prisoners. We have to force them out of their cave. And I get carried away, Sister Betty.
All right. Long and Ann, thank you. Thank you. Tom. Tom.
Yes, hello everyone. Brother Ralph asked the question, whose side are you on? But unless we use a class analysis, we may wound up on the wrong side. I wrote a brief article I'm going to read now entitled The True Function of Schools in a System Based on Social Class. Most Americans are in favor of community control of the schools. With the exception of large cities, such as New York City, schools in small towns practice community control. They elect their school boards and even in many cases their school superintendent. Why is it that big city schools are run by a mayor who selects a board of education or by a city council in which the mayor has great influence? It's because cities have large populations of communities of color. 50 years ago, black and Puerto Rican leaders from the Ocean Hill, Bronzeville, in Brooklyn set up a community control. 19 teachers and principals were dismissed and sent to the central board for reassignment. The United Federation of Teachers, UFT, led by Albert Shanker, called a citywide strike, despite the Taylor Law, which prohibits strikes by public sector employees in New York. However, some teachers opposed the strike, and they had to get court orders to reopen some of the schools as the custodians resisted opening the schools. I was one of those teachers who forced the reopening of George Washington High School in northern Manhattan, where I worked. The strike lasted for quite a while. I think, maybe 2 months, and the board reinstated the teachers in Ocean Hill, Brownsville. After the strike, those of us who had opened the schools were shunned and passed over for time-compensated positions. The strike was racist and resulted in a permanent cleavage between white teachers and communities of color. By the 1960s, only 3% of the principals and 8% of the teachers were black or Latino, while half of the 1 million students were black and Latino. Before the formation of the UFT, there were two teacher unions, one of which was called the TU, or Teachers Union, and was led largely by the Communist Party during the 1930s. However, after World War II, the red baiting in the McCarthy period purged the leadership of these unions. And the conservative UFT was formed. Schools, whether public or private, are really an instrument of the ruling elite oligarchy, just as Hollywood movies, TV, Broadway shows. This oligarchy will not allow schools to be truly independent, which encourage critical thinking. Their curricula is determined by the two-party control of the state legislatures. I have had the experience of being a student in a public school in Milford, Connecticut, in which middle-class children were segregated into special programs, much the way we have the spectacle of specialized schools in New York City, such as LaGuardia High School and right across the street, Martin Luther King High School. Students are trained to be employed in jobs that reflect their social class. There are so-called charter schools in middle. Are there so-called charter schools in middle and upper class towns? No. Recently, Governor Hochul and Mayor Eric Adams announced that state and city subsidies will be supplied to charter schools, which further undermine poor conditions in regular schools. Although charter schools are formed by a blind lottery, you have to apply for it. And these ESL students and their families are left out, and problematic students can be transferred back into regular schools. Despite the lack of a good education for all students, those parents and teachers who are working must continue to fight for true community control of the schools and equally funded school systems to build the democracy that this country has never had. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Dr. Hughes. And let me add, there were no principals of color until 1969, when we fought on the streets to bring that about. The first four principals and every union opposed the control of education by people of color, and the population in the schools was 60-70% people of color, and the budget was $20 billion, and we got little or none of that, although the school budget was for the education of black and brown children, that part of the budget. And so, yes, it's been horrible history, but we must improve on it. Sister Betty.
All right, we're going to keep this theme going. We have a community activist who's against mayoral control of our public school system. Sister Audrey, your mic is open.
Hi, good evening, Sister Betty, Brother Ralph, and all those other speakers. I am continuing up with the brother who just spoke on mayoral control. And I see that in this budget, they didn't include the mayoral control yet, and I know it expires in June, so I'm hoping that it's not going to be included and it's just going to expire and control goes back to the community. So the time is now to call on all New York State, New York City Council and Borough representatives to conduct a full and complete audit with open public hearings on 20 years of mayoral control before any extension is granted to Mayor Adams. Mayoral control handcuffs public school communities into silence about our own children's best interests. We need to have these children at the table before they go off to college. Join the resistance. Demand an audit of the last 20 years of the existing New York City education governance structure. Our electeds must also conduct open to all citywide public hearings with a public report of all findings before they push on an extension of mayoral control. We must support these resolutions. And today's news also brought the former mayor, Bloomberg, who was the first one to have mayoral control in these public schools. He's coming in with the charter schools, coming up against public schools. And so we have to continue to cry out for this audit and end mayoral control finally. Thank you for having me on, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. Thank you.
From the two different organizations that they can join to fight against mayoral control.
Yes, they should join the New York City Coalition to finally end mayoral control. And I am a Garveyite, the Universal Negro Improvement Association, founded by Marcus Mazaire Garvey in 1914. And under that umbrella, I'm also a Student Improvement Association member. And last year, we came out to protest against the mayoral control and filing a lawsuit against the city because the city has failed our children. And now they are coming out with these programs for the summer to, as a guise, to make like everything is fine. It is not fine. We need to still conduct an audit control and not give Eric Adams control of the public school because he is not able to do it. Unilaterally, he cannot do it. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that. And you've said the word that many in this system do not want to hear, the A word, audit. Where is the money? Sister Betty.
All right. Before we go and hear a report from African Graves Burial Site Matters in Maryland, we need to take a brief moment to touch basis with one of our analysts that we missed last week. Sister Nellie Bailey, your mic is open. Sister Nellie is with the Black is Back Coalition. She's with the Black Agenda Report. She's with the she organized the Harlem Tenants Council, and also a staunch advocate for those who want to hold the Democratic Party accountable. Sister Nellie, your mic is open.
Sister Nellie, your mic is open.
I'm trying to get my mic open.
We hear you.
Thank you. Oh, thank you. The report that we just received on the New York City public school system and the budget is right on target because one of the culprits behind all of this getting its hands on the public school budget is that of Wall Street. And we must lay the blame where it is. It also fits in with the privatization of New York City public housing, NYCHA. As we speak, the city has announced renovations in 16 major NYCHA buildings or projects, which means at the same time they are upgrading these properties for their privatization, which is underway. Tenants, public housing tenants, are organizing all over the city because they know what it means. Public housing, of course, is the housing, affordable housing of last resort for so many people. And in this scheme of NYCHA, people are told that they can move in with relatives or whomever and are given or offered a $1,000 allowance for moving out of their apartment, which, of course, is ridiculous, and no one is falling for that. The tenants are organizing grant houses and a number of other buildings, complexes, not only in Manhattan, the Bronx, as well as Brooklyn, because the handwriting is on the wall. Privatization is the scheme that is driving all of this. The public school budget NYCHA housing. It is to commandeer the resources that have served people of color, black people. Let's just say it as it is, black people. And as we know, Harlem is the Silicon Valley charter schools. It's the number of charter schools here in Harlem is just incredible, and it coincides with the sale of churches, numerous churches throughout Harlem. The scheme is to erase the very presence and existence. Everything is for sale. Nothing is sacred. I was just talking with some graduate students about the gentrification of Frederick Douglass Boulevard, and this was a Bloomberg initiative through C. Virginia Fields. She was the one who allowed for that gentrification of Frederick Douglass Boulevard. Nothing in that design includes housing, income-targeted housing for the people who live here. People are barely holding on, and we hear these cavalier comments about, well, listen, if we're doing okay and everybody else is doing okay, but that's not the case because we know that inflation, which means how much more you have to pay for food, gas, or whatever, is, they say it is 8.5%, but we know it is double digit and it is going up. It is going up. And these price hikes are untenable for working people. And we see very clearly that the gasoline gouge is from the profiteers here in Russia. They're the profiteers here in this country, shamelessly. We now have Reverend Sharpton and former President Barack Obama selling, they are a team, selling the Democratic Party once again to black people. And once again, we are in this holding pattern, repeat it, hold your nose and vote for Democrats. But they have a problem because the war in Ukraine have shifted everything for the U.S. empire. Far from the ruble collapsing, in fact, it has grown in strength. I know people don't want to hear this, but it is very clear that Russia is winning the war, as they will. And the good side of that, if one can't look at any good side, given the death toll, which is horrendous, and no one obviously wants that, is the unintended consequences of the U.S. government, because now the dollar is at risk of devaluation, the U.S. dollar. And the good side of that, if the U.S. dollar is no longer the global currency, then out the window goes sanctions. So there might be a rainbow at the end of this debacle, at the end of this carnage that is taking place. But we must take heed because people are organizing all over the country. The U.S. population is anti-war, not pro-war like the neocons in Washington, i.e. Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama and these Atlanticists, globalists, who don't give a 2 cents for the American people, as is the case in Europe. But Europe is headed for a disaster on a magnitude that is unimaginable. No food, no heat. The Russians will survive. They will have a hard time as the global market has been severely impacted by this war. But we do have what's happening with Ralph Pointer and Sister Betty, and we can tune in not only on Tuesdays but on Wednesdays to hear the real deal. And I think both of these stalwart activists and revolutionaries for allowing space for this type of discussion, awareness, and consciousness building in our communities. Thank you.
Well, thank you so much for that, Nellie Bailey. We can always have interesting facts and interesting knowledge. Maybe the knowledge and the facts that we put together here will help us talk together about housing. And as our dear Reverend Pinckney always says, it is not about one thing, it's about everything. And if we could pull it together, Obama and Brother Al are trying to get people to vote Democrat. And I say, people, people, please demand and begin with our political prisoners. And yes, go to housing and all of the other issues as one voice is one force. Thank you so much for that, Sister.
Yes, and Brother Ralph, we have an update on what's happening with Jalil. I understand that there is someone who is going to be writing a book about him, but he is stuck in Arizona away from his family. There are movements underfoot for him to be released. Compassionate release. And if Sister Anne is going to come back, perhaps she could give us an update on what is the latest with Jalil. Thank you both.
It's news to me, but we will give Anne a chance back and talk on that too. But we must go.
Are you sure you mean Jalil? Because Jalil Montekin is out already.
No, I'm talking about the political prisoner who he's not out, who is where is he? I just spoke to Ethea Wangaza, and she was pretty clear that's whom she was talking about. But
okay. We have a long list of people who want to speak. And if she means Jalil Montekin, he is out, correct?
Yes, Jalil is out. She's probably talking about Imam Jamil Al-Amin, who currently is out.
Yes. Imam
Al-Amin. Thank you, Anne.
The Conviction Integrity Unit in Georgia, his case is pending there. He is a Georgia State prisoner, but he's being held at USP Tucson. And similar to, Sundiata Poli, who is a Jersey State prisoner, but he's being held at FCI Cumberland in the BOP. So we have several prisoners who are being held by the feds. And I know one of the demands of Imam Jamil's supporters and IJAN is to bring him back to Georgia. The reason they took him away from Georgia to begin with was because they felt that he was too influential in the prison system. So
And there is a committee now that is working on a compassionate release from him. I didn't think I had that wrong. I just spoke to this sister. But thank you very much for that, Anne.
Thank you so very much for that report. And as I say, go to my book, which is the Jericho website, and we will find out everything about that. And remember, do not vote for people who do not support you. Sister Betty.
All right. We are talking about territory and land. And one of the things that's going on is that African graves matter. And there is a serious struggle all over this country as the indigenous people and the captives that were brought here from the continent of Africa are demanding the right to honor their ancestral dead. And so we have here one of the comrades who's in solidarity with the No Fear Coalition that is trying to save Moses Cemetery in Bethesda, Maryland. And this comrade is here to give us a report. Comrade Ali, your mic is open, and please update us.
Hi, thank you so much for inviting me on again. So, yeah, the Bethesda African Cemetery Coalition in Bethesda, Maryland has been fighting against the desecration of, you know, a large cemetery, a large burial ground where hundreds, maybe thousands of African people, you know, were buried after and before, you know, emancipation. And our county executive has really clamped down against us. You know, his name is Mark Elrich. He ran as a progressive. He's a Democrat. But he basically is telling the community that there is no way that this Black community will ever, ever, ever see their land returned to them, which we find completely unacceptable. And I recently confronted Elrich at a campaign event and told him, you know, I'm 22 years old. It's the first time that I'll ever be able to vote in an election. And I refuse to vote for anyone who won't, you know, ensure to the Black community that this problem will be solved. And, you know, Elrich essentially verbally, you know, abused me and told me that I didn't know anything, that I was delusional, that I live in a fairy tale land. He kept, you know, laughing at me, rolling his eyes at me. And I wasn't alone. I was with two comrades, and he treated us all, you know, as if we just don't matter, you know, because he is so comfortable abusing his power to take land away or to keep land away from Black people. But obviously it's no problem for him to, you know, demean young activists in his community. And so that is the most recent update. The community is, you know, appalled by Elrich's behavior. This is, you know, Mark Elrich. He's the Montgomery County Executive. He even, you know, dismissed our very real experience of following, you know, dump trucks away from carrying dirt from the cemetery to an unmarked plot of land. The coalition was able to dig through the dirt for 30 minutes. We found hair picks. We found funerary like objects that are typically associated with African graves. And when I told him this, he laughed and he said, that didn't happen, but we have it on video. We actually have video of the coalition digging through, you know, the remains of the cemetery that the county then steamed over and used trucks to crush. So this is a massive cover-up. And ultimately it's a struggle for land, and it's why they're clamping down so hard against us, because we know that land is power. And so, you know, we're not going to stop until every single government official that is responsible for this desecration, that is responsible for this crime, is held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. You know, they control the police, they control the courts. But, you know, if we can just get enough people to highlight this issue, to really make it clear that, you know, this genocidal act of desecration won't stand. They keep trying to, you know, pull our attention to the crimes happening in Europe right now. But the amount of crimes that the Maryland government, let alone a local level, but let alone on a federal level, is committing against Black people in this country, I mean, these people need to be held accountable legally, right? It's not enough to just vote them out. They need to be, you know, held accountable for the crime that they're committing, and that's why they really fear us.
Yes,
we always tell us what we need to do, remind us who we need to call, and let's make this a fairy tale a reality. And when we all get it together to understand it's not one thing, it's everything, and when we can support each other's struggles, when we put these issues together and demand action, we will get action. Thank you again. Try to get it on the website, the Jericho website. this information that we can just turn to. Thanks again.
Awesome. Thank you. And I'll just quickly say, if you want to call the office of the county executive, you can dial 240-777-0311. That's 240-777-0311. It's County Executive Mark Elrich in Montgomery County, Maryland. Thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much. The struggle continues. Sister Betty.
All right. We're going to continue. We're going to get everybody in. We're not, last week we were upstate and they cut us off prematurely. But this week we're back in Brooklyn, the Republic of Brooklyn, and we have control of our extension of time. Sister Dolores, your mic is open. Brother Joel, hang in there.
Thank you. Yesterday when I turned on the TV, I saw former Mayor Bloomberg leaving a podium from which he had just been speaking. And then I saw Mayor Adams start speaking, and it turned out that they were having a press conference at City Hall. The subject matter was charter schools that the two of them had teamed up about. Adams announced that he has pledged to grow the what he calls Summer Rising program to 110,000 elementary and middle school kids by more than 10%. Both public and charter school kids have access to this Summer Rising program. But there's also a summer program. It's called Summer Boost, B-O-O-S-T, Summer Boost New York City program that is limited to charter school kids only. Some charter networks have been criticized for benefiting from public funds while also having private funding. And Adams' response to this was him saying that he won't get caught up in the conversation of separating children based on the name of the school that they're in. And then Adams also stated that every young person, whether they're in a district school or a charter school, deserves a quality education. And that is what this administration is saying. That is what this mayor is doing, he said. And he also added that he believes in all-year school, all-year-round school. And he's made that clear previously, he said, that our children need to be to have structured education throughout the entire year to catch up and exceed. Now, on the other hand, city charter schools are slated for a $50 million investment for summer programs, spearheaded by former Mayor Bloomberg. This program is called Summer Boost, B-O-O-S-T, New York City. The program is estimated to cover some 25,000 kindergarten kids through eighth grade for an average of 5 weeks. Now, this program, this summer program, is for charter school students only, and it is expected that some charter schools will use the funds to expand their own programs, while others could incorporate the model curriculum that Bloomberg is backing. Now, in today's New York Post newspaper, in the opinions, Bloomberg has an article entitled, Why We're Giving $50 Million to Charter Schools to Help Kids Catch Up After the Pandemic. And in the article, he also congratulates Mayor Eric Adams and school Chancellor David Banks, yes, his name is Banks, you know, for expanding their summer program. And so the article in the Post states that, and this is Bloomberg's article in the opinion section, he says the vast majority of charter school students come from low-income households in Black and Latino communities, and they deserve high-quality education school programs. Charter school leaders are eager to offer them, but they need support to make it happen for curriculum, salaries for teachers, staff, transportation, and enrichment activities that involve social and emotional development. The funding we're providing will help them pay for all of these things. And that had me thinking about public school teachers who are digging into their own pockets to purchase supplies for their students. Also in the article, there's a photo in the New York Post article. There's a photo of two white kids who are leaving school, and the heading under the photo says, more young New Yorkers deserve access to opportunities But these are two white kids, okay? And now Bloomberg states that charter schools receive less in per pupil state education funding than district schools. But the flexibility they have to empower teachers and principals and hold them accountable for success has produced extraordinary results. In New York City, charters outperform district schools by 10 points in English and more than 15 points in math, and many have reduced or eliminated the achievement gap with the state's wealthiest suburbs. More New Yorkers deserve access to these opportunities, and our leaders in Albany should help provide them by lifting the state cap on charter schools. Nevertheless, charter schools, like
Dolores,
students,
Dolores, I think what we have to do is I don't feel comfortable doing propaganda for corporations. All of the statistics show the charter schools do not have the credibility and the statistics that public schools have that are allowed to be under the control of the community. Now, what proof do we have of this? The majority of the charter schools are in poor black neighborhoods where the Democratic Party is in charge and will not fund the black community schools to the extent that it funds white public schools. New York City is a perfect example of that.
Well,
and these hustlers are putting out this propaganda line. So we know on this program, give their message. We don't let them have free publicity. But I say to everyone, do your homework. When you Google the statistics of charter schools, they do not succeed to the extent that a fully funded public school. Secondly, the majority of African American children do not have access to charter schools because they have a particular clientele that they want. And this is what Sister Nelly was talking about, and this is what Comrade Tom was talking about.
And these folks, Bloomberg and Eric Adams, their program is to break up the public school system. And I put it the lie to them. If they're so interested in the charter schools, when do they allow the charter school teachers to have the same hours, the same time to teach the same children, the same money and benefits? These are hustlers and liars, and they will put programs together that will blind your eyes, blind the eyes of your mind.
But what we are going to
insist on a public school system.
And this is why we're going to have a special program on BAI around this whole issue of charter schools. And we definitely want you to be a part of it. Because one of the things everybody knows, if a child does not suit the template that the charter school has for the type of student they want, they kick them out to the public schools. The public schools educate everybody with less funds than the charter school. So I am very pleased to hear that you're keeping track of our enemy. But as Sister Audrey said, show me the money. We want an audit. You know, that's why we're calling
The stats that Bloomberg gives are opposite of stats that I've heard about the, achievements of charter schools.
And this is what Sister Nellie is saying. And Sister Audrey Dennis, I assume you agree with us.
Yes, I do.
All righty. So let us put it together. Let us put our heads, hands, hearts, and boats together to beat these people. And we have others next. Strategy we must work on is unionize the teachers at a charter school. Same hours, same wage, same everything.
Same population. Yeah. All right. Thank you, Sister Dolores. Like I said, and I also sent you an email. I don't know if you got it regarding
another.
Yes, we will talk. Thank you.
Yeah,
Brother Joel, your mic is open.
Hi, everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I want to say that what I've been, if you look at today's New York Times, there's just one after another of old-fashioned articles which come very short of proclaiming outright white racial superiority and motivating very negative feelings towards people of color and the way that the way things are moving. And what we have now, we've had some people talking about the Ukraine not yet tonight, and but on the other programs and others talking about what's going on here. And it seems that what is developing is a world war, and there are these two fronts. And if you look at New York City, it's one of the major fronts. And we noticed that there was a lot of the coverage of, that took place after the incident on the shooting incident on the 36th Street Station on the N train in Brooklyn. And most of the comments were critical that this is somehow a leftover from a leniency by the police towards black people, which somehow is being held responsible. And they're calling on this regime in New York City now to be much tougher than the previous one, which they brand as soft or at least lazy about law enforcement, that it's got to be tougher. And a lot of the coverage included quotes or utterances from the person that was arrested and apparently involved in the shooting, that he should have been detected years ago and locked up because he makes statements that they compared to critical race theory. And some of the critical, anti-critical race theory in the media now has been expanded from what was patently coming from the far right against the critical race theory, which means telling the truth about the racial aspects of U.S. history. It's not just, it's not really a theory. It's just a graphic statement of what really happened in this country. They say, well, you see, he uttered these remarks, and therefore he may have been motivated by critical race theory. So they're saying that they're implying that because he was uttering such remarks, that he should have been in jail already. So
oh my
think
God.
Of what the implications of that could mean, that they're more and more trying to convince people that there has to be preventive detention of everyone who makes an impactful criticism on the even somebody that was just doing it like not in the media, not an editorialist, not a an educational official proposing a program, but somebody who up until now had been a an ordinary citizen. That true, he had been arrested a few times, but not for any kind of a violent crime. I think they threw in that he had been arrested as a pot dealer at one time, and so they're saying, well, you see, you put these two things together. He was arrested, and he's said some remarks that showed that he had a consciousness of racism. That should have indicated that he was potentially somebody who could have done what he's accused of doing at 36th Street. And it comes at an ideal time, you know, right after the way that the Academy Awards incident has been covered in terms of the so-called flap and the racial overtones in which that was covered after years of largely excluding black people, and still to this day in terms of the proportion of the awards and everything else, from showing a very heavy discrimination from the Academy Awards, even though Hollywood is accused of being ultra-liberal these days. And I guess much of it really is, but the people that can manipulate the events are a wholly different bent than some of the movie stars you might hear about, many of whom do have very progressive opinions, although still largely basing them on the expansion of people benefiting from imperialism in the United States, which is why they all seem to cluster together on an ultra-reactionary line, risking World War III to get the U.S. more heavily militarily involved in the Ukraine, where the Russians are really reacting to a pre-invasion of the Ukraine. It was a coup d'etat that took place in 2014.
We covered that. Would you
come
to a conclusion?
Okay, well, I'm saying that the interesting thing about the 36th Street thing was that it took place. They say that all the cameras somehow were out. It reminds me of what happened when Epstein allegedly committed suicide in prison. All the cameras that were watching his cell and were out, and the two guards that were supposed to be watching his cell had fallen asleep at the same time as he allegedly committed suicide when he was on suicide watch. So it's the same kind of MO. Somehow those cameras were out. And I want to say that
we got that. And all of this information tells us what direction this system is going into. Eric Adams is there for a purpose, and that is to bring heavy police action as a black mayor. And we see what Bloomberg's actions are for. So we know the direction they want to take us. Let us resist. Let your motto be resistance. Let us keep listening in, and let us act on this as a unit. Sister Betty,
thank
you so much for that, Joel.
Thank you, Joel. And we hope that you will join the struggle for community control of schools with us. We'll be giving you more information.
Well,
we
of
could
course.
Use... Thank you. Brother Hagen, Henry Hagen, your mic is open.
Thank you, Sister Betty and Sister Ralph. And I want to encourage folks that if they're free on Sunday between 11 and 4, that they avail themselves to celebrate Mumia's birthday at 68 Avenue C and 5th Street in Manhattan. He's more than deserving of such recognition and support. I'd like to just briefly share with you a poem entitled Injustice Breeds Resistance. And Langston spoke of rivers as transmission belts of continuity, anchored in a continent that first ignited human thought in its dependent and intensely curious infancy. Years grow old. Who will now carry the torch of our mandated resistance struggle as we pass on? Tectonic evidence of African rebellion against tyranny abound everywhere and is vividly sculptured into the streams that became seas and then into oceans. One day you will lose the arrogance and power, slave drivers, and it's not too far away. Patrice Lumumba's heroic stance and Cuba's strategic Operation Carlotta were warning signs never to be forgotten, eternally remembered. Sleeping giants, women and men, continue to awaken to the monumental tasks fired by Lenin's classic question, what is to be done? History is amply providing answers. And there I'll end it.
Well, thank you so much for that. And the history of today, the presence of today, is bringing us very close to the question of whose side are you on, or what does the side you're on represent? Thank you so much for that, Henry Higgins. Everything has a continuity, has a beginning, a middle, and an end. And so thanks again for that, Sister Betty.
Before we go on to our next scholar and comrade, 6825, the last four digits were 6825. Did you want to make a comment? 6825.
Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Sure, I'm Jacqueline Wade. I'm just like the gentleman who called before, reminding people about the event at 15C Cafe Cultural Center. I'm the designer and the builder for the giant mumia puppet, 18-foot mumia puppet, that is going to be at this event. The reason I'm calling in is that puppets, whether people know it or not, are transformative. And the puppet is there in the spirit of Mumia and everything that he represents and everything that this event represents. So I am telling people and asking people to please come out and support. And if you can't come out, then please send your friends and everyone out to this major, major, major event on Sunday to celebrate Mumia's birthday and to learn about the puppet and what it's all about, and to spread love, not fear. So please come out. If you have any questions about why the puppet was built, how long ago it was built, and I've been to many other events also. So that's it, Jacqueline Wade.
Thank you so much for art for politics, political art. Thank you again, Sister Betty.
I want to say that the puppet makes laws of tension. And when people look at the puppet, then they want to say, why is he so important? And this is art at its best. And we thank you, Mr. Wade.
Thank you. I want to
say, mic, Dennis, your mic is open.
Yes. Update. People's World. This came out on yesterday. An update to our friend and comrade, Melissa Lucio. Who was to be slated to be executed on the 27th. And due to all the work that Jericho has done, boots on the ground, the petition signatures that were gathered were 238,270. We exceeded, should I say, it exceeded the needed signatures. Texas prosecutor may temporarily spare Melissa Lucio, the woman many believe who is innocent. At a combative legislative meeting or hearing, the Cameron County District Attorney indicated Tuesday he may step in and stop Melissa Lucio's April 27th execution, creating a new level of uncertainty in what many believe is the case of an innocent woman facing lethal injection. Although he was not district attorney when Lucio was convicted, Cameron County District Attorney Louis Sanchez did request the execution date and has the power to withdraw the request. During a heated exchange with a bipartisan group of lawmakers pushing to halt Lucio's execution, Sayens initially stated he would not intervene. As outrage has built to a crescendo over Lucio's case, Sayens has previously stated and reaffirmed in the hearing that he stood by the process that led to Lucio's conviction and the many court rulings since that have upheld her death sentence. But after about an hour of urging from lawmakers, Sayens' stance shifted. He said he believes his intervention will be unnecessary because the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals will likely stop Lucio's execution. If he doesn't, he said, he would, though he didn't provide details. I wanted to give you that update. Also, secondly, the Uhuru Solidarity Movement, the climate crisis, is Colonial Mode of Production, will be hosting climate reparations on Wednesday, April 27th at 6 p.m. Eastern Time. tinyurl.com/climate reparations. As you know, there are 435 people dead in South Africa from the floods. So I wanted to raise those issues up and that great information that we got. Thank you all on this call. Thank you, Jericho Movement, for all that you do. Thank you, Sister Betty and Brother Ralph. Uhuru.
Uhuru, freedom. And one of the things that we must understand, in this capitalist system, nothing gets in the way of capital. Every instance, every issue is used to make more money. We see COVID has been used to enrich folks. We see the war in Ukraine is being used to enrich folks. It's a constant. The war has turned any lip service on cleaning up the environment moot. The war takes precedence. Money takes precedence. We are going nowhere in terms of making the earth more livable. And this is a tragedy. And environmental liberation is a long way off until we, the people, say no more. And it must become one of the unifying elements of all of us together saying no more. And thank you so much for that, Dan.
Okay, before we go back to get a brief respite with Sister Nellie, I see 0560. I don't know if we called on you. 0560. Did you want to say a word?
0560, your microphone is open. Well, I would hope that no one go to sleep after listening.
I had no idea that it was open. This has been an incredible program. I'm really, really revved up and inspired by it. And I love the way we got into, you know, and really into the charter school issues and so much to think about and so much to do together. We've got to change the system, that's for sure. And I love hearing Jacqueline and good news about the puppet and the 24th, the celebration of Mumia's birthday. Many, many wonderful things. And thank you for giving me the mic. I didn't expect it. Okay, thank you very much.
You're quite welcome. And the key words are, we must do things together. All of us or none of us. And with that said, let's be ready to continue this struggle with action as well as words. And one more time, good night. Much love to our brothers and sisters. Take us home.
Sister Nellie, did you want to make a closing comment? Oh, she hung up. Okay. Okay, once again, let's see if we can open Ann's mic and she can give us, she and Henry can give us the words on Mumia as we take it home.
Okay.
Go ahead.
I did just find out that the April 21st event for Eric King has been canceled, probably due to the current situation because the lawyers are probably scrambling around trying to prevent him from going to USP meet. So
okay.
I just need that out just so people know. And I'm certainly looking forward to the April 24th event for Mumia. You know, we've been out there for Mumia since the inception of the whole thing. And you know, stop there formed the Free Mumia Abu Jamal Coalition precisely because of the danger Mumia was in when he was on death row. Well, he's no longer physically on death row, but he's on what is known as slow death row, or death by regulation, as Maroon used to say. So very important that people come out and get informed and see what next steps are for Mumia. So looking forward to seeing people on Sunday.
Thank you. And for everyone, please tune us in tomorrow on COINTELPRO with Jaleel Montekim and Sister Cleo Silvers. As Noe was saying, we're going to be talking it up. And if you can't get in on the 212-209-2877, text us. And we're going to try to get you on our mic. Thank you, because we recognize there have been some technical issues. Technical with quotation marks. Tomorrow, folks, 99.5 FM. Thanks, everyone, and good night. Thank you.